Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
I recently found out that you can see a personal dietitian covered by insurance. There's this platform called Nourish that will match you with a dietitian based on whatever your concerns are, whether that's weight loss, eating disorders, autoimmune conditions, or something else. They're actually a network with major insurance providers, so most patients pay $0 out of pocket. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Washington, what a play call!
You're listening to the best of the Commanders.
And it is good! Washington wins!
A weekly mix of 106.7 The Fan and 980 The Team's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Question we're asking you guys is, what would you prefer? Defensive end, offensive weapon, or trade back? You can go vote now. This is what Mel wrote for the pick for Washington. He said, Stewart's draft stock is hard to predict. As I mentioned earlier, I considered him for Cincinnati at number 17. He comes off the board here 12 spots later, though. It's the same dilemma the GMs will be struggling with on draft night. Stewart has all the talent in the world, speed, explosiveness, power. But he also only had 4.5 sacks over 3 seasons. We just talked about this.
That's right.
That is a red flag. Goes on to say, if an NFL coaching staff can help him put it all together, the upside's immense. I'm betting on Commanders coach Dan Quinn unlocking that potential. Dante Fowler Jr.'s departure in free agency means there is a hole opposite Dorrance Armstrong on the D-line. It is nice, not just that Kiper feels good about the coaching staff, but that I feel confident for once that we can actually groom and develop talent. Like, there was a time for a long time around here where you couldn't draft a guy like Shamar Stewart
right. And
expect to get more
anything.
Out of him
yeah.
or, you know, tap into the sack potential. But I think he's right. With Dan Quinn and Joe Witt and the defensive line group, Ryan Kerrigan, Daryl Tapp among them, I actually think he's right that this is a pretty good coaching staff to try to take an athlete who's got all the starter kit, speed, explosive power, all those things, and then turn them into a stat compiler.
That's the design, right? And you know, that element of player development is something that you see once in a blue moon. Every once in a while, you get a Terry McLaurin, right? Who's a third rounder who blossoms and, you know, that I suppose takes advantage of the coaching or whoever's there, but turns into a star. That doesn't happen around here all that often, right? You get guys that either come in with the pedigree and they can already do it, or I guess it's sort of rare that it would happen. More commonplace, I think, in good programs, and you'd like to think that's what this is now. So you could take someone that's a bit more of a clay mold and turn him into something really, really good. I'd have more confidence in them than, say, the Rivera era.
What's your answer to the poll? You taking an edge, you going weapon, or you trading back?
It's weapon for me. And I know that's probably going to go against type or against the majority of the people. They're going to say edge rusher or trade back. To me, this is a philosophical thing. I look at what happened to Houston this past year, and that's kind of my roadmap. Year one, what Washington just did mirrored them. In fact, superseded them. Year two for Houston was disappointing by every account. They went and added a bunch of pieces, and C.J. Stroud stepped back a little tiny bit. I think that's a schedule thing. It's a league adjustment thing. Defensive coordinator staying up late thing. I want to make things easier in year two than they were even in year one for Jaden Daniels. So I think it's special and wonderful and awesome and all the good things. To me, if Matthew Golden somehow was there, I would go crazy. I think Tet McMillan's going to be gone. I see a lot of variance on where Golden might end up. I've seen him in the 20s at times. If he's there, great. That's what I'd be excited about. But I don't know. To me, one more wide receiver to kind of complement the group that you had instead of going, let's give these touches to Jamison Crowder. I'm trying to make it as easy as possible. I think they've done an awesome job now with trading for Tunsil and sort of improving two spots on that line. I would love one more weapon to help this offense.
I'm going to try to have my cake and eat it too, I think. I'm going to trade back for sure, and that's my answer to this poll, is that at 29, I'm coming back several spots to add picks because I've only got five, and I'm only picking twice in the top 125, and I'm only picking three times in the top 200. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's just not enough quality football players being added to what is an old team, essentially.
Yep.
I mean, they sign a lot of guys that are on 1 or 2 year deals that are deeper into their career. This is my opportunity to add some youth and some upside. And if I'm just taking two players in the first 3.5 rounds, that does not butter the bread for me. So I'm going to trade back from 29 with an eye on getting an edge, getting a running back, getting a receiver shortly thereafter. So if I can move back from 29 to, say, like 40, and I could pick up two picks in the first 125, I think that would be perfect for me. Because while getting an elite weapon at running back would be cool, you know, if Omarion Hampton, as an example, fell, it would be really hard for me to trade back. I'd probably take him. I don't think he's going to be there. I think Genty and Hampton both come off the board. I think I could probably take Henderson, you know, at 38, 40, wherever I'm picking, after I trade back if I wanted to do that. I may feel like I have to go edge there, and then later I go with Quinshon Judkins from Ohio State or Caleb Johnson from Iowa or, you know, another of the running backs that could go in the second round. But I'd like to get to a point where after I trade back at 29, maybe I trade back one more time at 61. And so it's a quantity over quality thing. But I think that you can get what you want, Danny, the wide receiver that can help, if you draft well in the third round where Terry was. Now, are you better off drafting in the first round? Probably. Although I would say the late first round.
This class is probably going to have three guys going
exactly.
The first round.
And I think late first round for receivers is kind of a dangerous area anyway, if you look at it. Like in the late 20s, I don't know how often those guys end up being the really, really good players. But we've also heard, and it's been a few weeks since we had a draft expert on, but remember, we had a couple of guys on that said the difference in this class between like 20 and 50 is not that substantial. So I think it might actually be the perfect year to be able to trade back at 29, get your receiver, get your running back, get your edge, and just add more overall.
That makes a lot of sense to me, honestly. That's probably the most prudent approach, right? And my view depends on a guy or two falling that I don't know how likely that is. So to me, that would be my 1A, if not even my full-out second choice, because it takes pressure off, in my view, right? When you're sitting there with only a couple of picks and X number of holes, you get a schlub like me, and they don't view it this way. They'll probably, stay, this is what our board said. We stick to the board, best available. But for me, I'm sitting there going, look at the glaring need. Here are the three glaring needs, and I've got three picks to do it. Whereas last year, you could go, here's a bit of a luxury pick. We're going to take Johnny Newton. We don't need it desperately right now this minute, but we're layering, and it's going to come in handy. We got a need at corner, enter Sandra Stowe. We got a need at tight end, potentially, and you know, who knows how that's going to go. But you know what I mean? Instead of saying, I've had free agency, I've got way fewer salary cap dollars to allocate, and I have fires that I have to put out right now, there's less pressure when you've got more picks to do it. You could start taking some of those luxury items.
It's been 6 years, so I'm not even sure that this is the best way to try to get a feel for what you could get. But Washington traded up to the back end of the first round, if you remember, to get Montez Sweat at pick number 26. And when they did that, they gave up pick 46 and a second round pick the following year. So it was, the equivalent of the pick that they gave up and then 46 and the pick the following year. I don't know how much I'd be interested in something like that on a trade back, in fairness. Like, if I'm trading back, Danny, I want picks this season. Because part of why I'm trading back is, as I said,
I need the right now.
I think it's important to add youth to this team. I have no problem with the veterans that they've signed because I think that, A, it worked last year, and I think this is what Adam Peters kind of wants to do. It elevates your floor, makes it harder to be really bad. But I also think it's the way of the league now, where there's just not as many really good players coming available younger in their career. But I'm not going to trade for, to move down 20 picks this year and add a second rounder next year. This is not about next year for me. Nothing about this offseason has really been about next year, in my opinion. When you go get Deebo Samuel for 1 year, when you bring in Laremy Tunsil the way that they did, the picks that you've given up for Marshawn Lattimore, who's got 2 years left, it's about this coming season.
I agree with you. I mean, the window at least is now-ish, right? In other words, if it's not this year at a premium, maybe it's next year. But the point is, this is all short-term thinking, right? Which is fine, because you've got the window now, and Jaden Daniels has already crossed that bar of, yep, it's worth going all in because that dude's awesome.
You can call us at 800-636-1067 like Mo did in Largo. What's up, buddy? How are you?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Hey, bud.
Grant, I don't know if we're simpatico or I've just been listening to you guys so much that now I'm just starting to think like you. I'm totally with the trading back twice scenario if the opportunity presents itself. I understand that, yes, we do need another threat at wide receiver, and I'm with you there. But personally, I got my sights set on Ty Felton. And I don't believe we have to go high in the draft to get him. I think he's an exceptional playmaker, great route runner, exceptional hands. I mean, what else do you need from the young man? But we definitely need to address the edge rushing position, but we do need to acquire more picks. Because, like you said, it's an older team, and we need to build some type of foundation of youth for the years moving forward. Thank you, gentlemen.
Appreciate you, buddy. So Ty Felton, for people that don't know, is a wide receiver from Maryland. I watched him a lot this past year. He's fantastic. Had a good pro day. He is the exact type of player I'm talking about. Now, whether he's available, whether the stars align, that I can't tell you. But coming off 96 catches for 1,100 yards, not being in the first or early second round mix, in my opinion, that's exactly what I'm talking about. A player like that, where if you strike gold and develop him, and we're saying we like their staff to develop a little bit better. They added Wes Welker yesterday to the wide receiver room.
They did.
Was going to help them continue to coach these kids up. Like, there are guys like him that you can get who will help your football team in mid to late round two, maybe round three. Another guy I'll tell you that I really, really like is Bashaul Tutin, this running back from Virginia Tech who ran the fastest 40 among all the running backs at the combine. He ran for 1,159 yards and 15 touchdowns this year. This is not a player that is in the first round mix. I don't think there's mocks where he's going early to mid second round. Again, these are just local guys that I watched a lot.
Sure, that you got to see, yeah.
That I think could help them a ton as a non-draft expert. And I know they're going to be available in rounds two and three, so to speak. So I think that's going to be there for them if they need it. And it's why trading back is a perfect solution for me. If they didn't have only five picks, then yeah, stick and get your edge. Stick and get your wideout that's better than Ty Felton. But I think Felton can play in the league for a long time. I think Tutin's going to be a really good back for a long time. And there's several guys like each of them at their positions that are going to be available in the mid-rounds.
The only thing I worried about, if you add extra picks and start layering in a smart way, which we're all talking about, I'm not sure about the Ben Sinnott situation, kind of as my glaring example. I've got veterans that are very dependable, and I've got this veteran-laden team for my window right now. And if I'm trading back for a third-round receiver, like, I need time to develop that guy. Is Noah Brown getting those looks? Is, name that other veteran that's TBD going to get some of those chances instead of him? That's always the hard part about trying to win right now. I mean, the Caps have done it, but most teams have a hard time either kind of walking in the middle of the road between rebuilding and competing at a high level.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North convenience stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Remember, if you want to text us throughout the show, you can do that on the Junkies text line, brought to you by Lido Pizza, a local favorite since 1955. Serving pizzas, subs, jumbo wings, and salads, Lido Pizza is square because Lido Pizza never cuts corners. For locations or to place your order, go to LidoPizza.com. Text us at 1-800-636-1067. Standard message and data charges may apply. All right, so we wanted to get into some audio we have of Jonathan Allen from when he joined Chris Long on the Green Light podcast, him talking about his time with Washington, how he's assimilating in Minnesota. Here's former longtime Junks guest and longtime Commanders DT, Jonathan Allen.
We were just talking offline. We got to go up there last year for training camp, and I was blown away by the facility, man. You talk about, like, I remember when I visited Washington in free agency. And not to dog the facility back in 2016, but it wasn't much going.
No.
And getting to see Minnesota, I mean, that's some state-of-the-art right there. And right down to, they got aquapana in the refrigerators. You're drinking like $50 water at the facility. Were you blown away when you went and visited?
I was. I mean, the one thing we're always told in college is once you get to the NFL, the facilities aren't nice. Just everything's not as nice. Like, as far as just how much money is being spent on the players, college, one of the top programs is usually the best. But man, when I came here and I seen they have kombucha and they just had all the drinks in the fridge and the facilities, I was just like, wow. Like, I feel like I've been cheating my last 8 years. I'm like, these guys over here living like this is incredible.
You said something that, you know, kind of I was wondering with you for 7 years. I remember I have the date here, October 22nd, 2023, that famous post game rant from you where you're like, I'm tired of this. It's been 7 years of this. And as a guy who played for a lot of losing teams the first 8 years of my career before I changed teams, I know how you feel. And I'm wondering how hard it was when ownership changes, it looks like it's going the right direction. You got that dynamic rookie quarterback who's going to be incredible. And you're like, damn, I got to leave now. I bet it softens the blow to go to Minnesota, but is part of you like, geez, they got their together and now I got to go?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, again, I've always thought I was going to finish my career in Washington. And in a perfect world, I probably would have finished it there. But, you know, God has other plans for me. And I always just remember Coach Saban saying that on the other side of something that's challenging, uncomfortable, difficult is usually what you've been looking for all along. So, I mean, this is just an opportunity for me to grow. I don't think I could have found a better organization and team to come to for what I wanted. Like, my agent and my financial guy are already in Minneapolis, so I was going up there every year, 2-3 times a year. My wife loves it. She already has a bunch of friends out there. She's from the Midwest. So it's, honestly, this is probably the dream situation.
Well, that's good for him.
Yep, it is.
Great landing spot for him.
I feel good for him.
And he got a fat contract, too.
Oh, he got a nice deal. But yeah. I can also see where part of him is torn, where he toiled and worked here for so many years on so many bad losing teams. Then when Harris comes in, the ownership changes. They make so many upgrades. They draft Jaden Daniels. The team's fortunes turn around, and then he gets released. So it has to be bittersweet because he's you know, given his blood, sweat, and tears to this franchise his entire career. Then they finally start turning the corner, and then he's basically discarded.
Yeah, he's not part of the reward.
Yeah, the cookie crumbles.
I know, it's the business of the NFL. You know,
And he was very positive.
All things being equal, he would have liked to have stayed here and ended his career here.
Yeah, right.
But that's not the way professional sports work.
I don't know if you have more of the audio, but he's very positive about the culture that they've established here with Coach Quinn.
Yeah, I think Valdez might be, he can search for that. I don't know if he has that or not.
He doesn't have it.
But yeah, like it sounds like he landed in a great spot. This is a Minnesota team that's really upgraded their defense by adding him, Javon Hargrave, like to an already pretty good defense. Like it's a good spot for him.
And by the way, I don't think I mentioned it, but I saw, did you guys happen to see the interview that DQ did with Shane Battier and Alex Smith and then some finance guy? I think it's called like Glue Guys Podcast. Have you heard of that podcast?
I saw that.
Did you see that interview with DQ?
I just saw a summary of it. I didn't watch the interview.
But nothing earth shattering in there.
Talks about his style, like he learned under Carroll and Saban.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's again,
he talks about being authentic.
Yeah, it's more insight into sort of how he got to where he is right now, and sort of learning along the way.
How he connected with the players.
Yeah,
the brotherhood, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's good. I highly recommend it.
Yeah,
I mean, it's funny that like Alex Smith, I never would have envisioned him like having a podcast. Like everyone's got a podcast, and by the way, that's it was a quality podcast. You know, I don't know how Alex and Shane Battier hooked up. But it was interesting.
Yeah, that's an odd pairing.
Yeah, it's an odd pairing. And then they have like a business guy too. So they have an NFL guy, a basketball guy, and a guy clearly is, I don't know.
John Allen in that clip mentioned kombucha.
Yeah.
I've never sampled it. I'm intrigued.
What is that? Is that like
a
drink?
I looked it up. It's a fermented tea
made
from sweetened black tea, bacteria, and yeast.
Yeah, I think I've had it before. Like if I've had an upset stomach,
one of the guys I had lunch with yesterday ordered it.
It's touted for potential health benefits, which makes sense to try it. Improved digestion, boosting your immune system, lowering cholesterol levels, and supporting cardiovascular health.
And I'm all about that.
So it sounds like it might be worth trying.
I
don't really know what it's all about.
Don't they just sell it at regular?
Sounds like it's pricey.
Oh, don't they sell it?
It is pricey.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong.
They sell it at regular grocery stores.
Yeah.
They also sell it at hippie grocery stores too. But like,
I haven't gone to a hippie grocery. What's a hippie grocery store?
Like Roots Organic Market. I have one of those in my neighborhood. I don't frequent it, but I've been to it before.
Yeah. I don't go to those.
I'm sure you don't.
I got to like safe.
That's what I usually go to. I usually go to the big corporate grocery stores.
Right.
But sometimes I'll pop into the hippie grocery store. It's happened.
By the way, are you guys following this the the kid that was stabbed by the other track
guy. I saw the article.
Are you following that?
Not really. Sounds like there was a dispute at a track meet. One guy stabbed another guy. Guy bled to death.
The kid that stabbed him is claiming that he felt threatened, right?
Right, right.
If there was some confrontation, he told him, get out from underneath that tent. That's not your tent or whatever. And then there was some sort of... Did I read at some point that he was claiming he was being bullied?
I don't know. I haven't really gotten into
the there was a self-defense angle.
Yeah, self-defense angle. And then, by the way, Daily Mail is 3 days late. They are picking up on the Tiger Woods story that when he issued that video of him announcing his nine-hole renovated
with the patch,
looked good. He looked horrible.
Yeah. I saw some online chatter.
I mean, he looks all bloated. He looks all bloodshot. Mm. What is going on with Tiger?
Who knows?
Always something.
He's got something. He's always on something.
You
got
to do a deep dive. Dude, if
you had 18 surgeries on your body like him, including a recent Achilles surgery, you'd be on something too. You'd look poopy.
To deal with the pain.
Hell yeah.
I mean, I guess.
Can you imagine what he feels like when he wakes up?
No.
Probably ain't good.
I guess. What was the latest thing? It was for Achilles.
Yeah.
Achilles.
Has he
had
two Achilles surgeries then?
I don't know.
It almost sounded like a reoccurring issue.
This one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. And he did the worst April Fool's Day little tweet. It was embarrassing.
Remind me, I've already forgotten.
He said that his extensive rehab and hyperbaric chamber has made him, he's going to be playing in the Masters.
People who have no sense of humor, i.e. Tiger Woods, shouldn't try to pull off April Fool's jokes.
Yeah,
they're impossible to pull off even for the funniest people on the planet, let alone a guy with no personality like Tiger.
Just in the last 2 years, he had a right ankle. Actually, I'm sure if he had surgery for that, but he had a sixth surgery on his back, and that was last September. And then, of course, March 11th this year, he had the surgery for the Achilles.
Right. Cakes, when you
he's had, I think I've heard either 16 or 18 surgeries.
It's a lot.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps. Restrictions apply.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So Dan Quinn was on a podcast. It's called The Glue Guys, and Shane Battier and Alex Smith were two of the three guys that were... having a conversation with Dan Quinn. This was, I think, last week. Somebody sent this to me, and I actually watched the whole thing. Quinn was great, but there was one part of it that I cut out and wanted to play. You know, we talked about last year, the new kickoff rules, and Washington, during the course of the season, it became very obvious that they were intentionally kicking into the landing zone. They wanted to cover kicks, and they were very good at it. Of course, with the exception of the Dallas game, that was problematic and cost them dearly. But they were kicking into that landing zone. And we wondered, is it because their kickers don't have big enough legs when required to kick it through the end zone? Or do they just feel like there's a really good chance covering kicks they can force teams to start, before the 30-yard line on average? And they were effective doing it. They did it all year. But Quinn was asked, as part of a conversation about kind of glue guys on teams and the importance of role players. He was asked about that, and you'll hear him get into a conversation about how they handled the kickoffs last year. I thought the answer was very interesting. Here's how it went.
On a regular basis, man, that like you need to recognize the role players, the guys that are like really living the standards, going it. As a coach, I get to express it some through like our special team. So one small story, this year the NFL adopted a new policy that it was a whole new kicking game, you know, for kickoff and kickoff return. So I thought if we were going to have a play style of toughness, we were going to like cover more kicks and put it in play more than anybody. And I thought it would develop the younger players. It would give us an edge. And quite honestly, I thought like maybe there's a gap that we could fill to bridge some of the talent. And we covered more kicks than any team in the NFL. We didn't have the most kickoffs. Like, we weren't the most highest scoring, but we put it in play the most. So a guy like Jeremy Reeves or Nick Ballore, like, they could absolutely, or Percy Butler could, like, express their toughness and speed and effort and energy for the team. And so I think on special teams is a glue position. They're generally not the high paid. It's really important for field position. And so when that new rule came, I was super intentional about, like, we're going to do this. So, like, we have an excellent special team coach named Larry Izzo, who's a fantastic special team player. Like, I committed before we even started it, like, we're going to do this more than anybody, just to, like, establish it and prove our toughness. And it came through. We were excellent at it.
I hadn't even thought of that with the new kickoff rule. And it was amazing to hear you say, like, how intentional you were about that. And, like, Jeremy Reeves, a guy I know well, man.
Yes, man. Like, that's his livelihood.
Yeah. Plays with that same passion. So I love that.
Yeah. So that part, like, I wanted to make sure, like, we were going to be different. That's why I said we're not going to be for everybody. Like, not everybody wants to cover kicks and, like, be down with that. But, like, we were going to establish a toughness well before our scheme. And so that was a big part of it.
This was, to me, and he didn't say this, but the kickoff rule in part changed because it was a non-play. And then last year, you still had, you know, 68% or so touchbacks. Now, that was down from the year before at like 79% in terms of touchbacks. But still, overall, it was a non-play because you had a high touchback percentage rate. And on those touchback plays, they're non-plays for the players, too. There's a lot of running down the field and not a lot of hitting in most cases. You know, players kind of take those plays off when they know their kicker is going to kick it into the deep part of the end zone or even out of the end zone. And to hear him describe it as, you know, he wanted the Jeremy Reeveses and the Nick Ballores of the world to actually play football. You know, they weren't going to be in on defensive snaps. And if you're kicking out of the end zone, say 68% of the time, you're not participating in football for a lot of it. And he wanted that part of the game to be a part in which they establish some sort of edge from a toughness standpoint. By the way, they established to a certain degree an edge in terms of, you know, starting field position. The return average for the teams, they didn't have the lowest return average necessarily. They had the lowest touchback percentage of all of their kicks. They didn't have the most touchbacks in total. The least amount of touchbacks in total. New Orleans actually did because they ended up having, I guess, more kickoffs or less kick. Their touchback percentage was a little bit higher than Washington's, but he did it intentionally. It wasn't because he didn't have kickers with big legs. It wasn't because he thought that, you know, they could be really good at covering kicks. He thought that, but he wanted his role players, his glue players, if you will, to play football. Now, there are other snaps that Jeremy Reeves and Nick Ballore would have chances of playing football on. You know, some of the other special teams units, or if they got into the games defensively. I think that's interesting because, you know, there was some risk with that too. You know, you had to be good at the landing area spots. You had to be good at covering kicks. You know, to take that sort of intentional approach to say, I want some of my glue players, my role players who I trust, and Nick Ballore and Jeremy Reeves would have been at the top of that list, special teams wise. You know, a guy like Michael Walker, you know, number 32, he had some big plays on special teams as well. You know, a guy like Jeremy McNichols, you know, on special teams played really well covering kicks. You had other guys. I'm trying to think of the list of players. You know, the Percy Butlers of the world on special teams as well. But he wanted those players that he considered to be tough football players to play football because he thought it would give the team a toughness edge and he thought it would give more credence to those players who he believed in as, you know, glue guys, locker room guys, culture guys. Tough to be that if you're not actually playing football and making plays. If you're lining up and the ball's sailing through the end zone 75-80% of the time. I'd not heard him explain it that way. Maybe you guys had. I had not heard him explain it that way. You know, again, some risk in doing that. Definitely, you know, some risk in that landing area. Now, this year, with the rule being tweaked, first of all, being made permanent, you know, in terms of kickoffs, the last year's kickoff rule now is a permanent rule. But the other part of it is the idea that if you kick it into the end zone as a touchback, it's coming out to the 35-yard line. I think we're going to see a much higher percentage of kickoffs short of the end zone. And we're going to see a lot more kickoff returns. Just handing the ball to a team at the 35-yard line just is not, I don't think, makes a lot of sense. So I think we'll see that skyrocket. They expected it to skyrocket last year with the extra 5 yards, the 25 to the 30 on touchbacks. It didn't. It went up in terms of the percentage of returns, but by like 11%, from like 21 to 32%. In terms of returns. So we got more of them, but not as much as they expected. But I think we will next year with the 35-yard line as the penalty for kicking it deep. I don't personally like that. I think we'll see a lot more kickoffs. It'll be a more exciting play. You're going to have to be really good at covering them, and you're going to have some guys that you think are really good football players that are going to get a chance to play football on kickoff returns. Special teams for so long during many of our lifetimes of watching football was a big part of the game, you know, returns, covering returns, you know, block kicks, etc. I mean, George Allen started it all off as the head coach of the Redskins in 1971. He was the first to hire an actual special teams coach. That man was Marv Levy, who went on to take Buffalo to 4 Super Bowls, losing all 4 of them. But, you know, in Washington's had a history of great special teams players, you know, covering kicks, Pete Wysocki, you know, the list goes on and on. But we've seen less of that over the years. We've seen, take the ball at the 25, we want our defense on the field. By the way, it means less practice time and focus on covering kicks if we're not going to cover kicks. And I think the game will change a little bit here in the coming years. And you're going to have to be really good at it. And you're going to have to draft players that can handle that. They think about those players all the time. It's not like they ignore it. But man, in the last 20 or so years, the kickoff portion of it became less emphasized. Guys like Jeremy Reeves and Nick Ballore are big time for Washington.
So The Athletic put out an article recently. They were talking to different executives, and one of the executives, anonymous, of a senior personnel around the league, said this, talking about the Commanders. Uh-huh. He said, quote, "I'm afraid that is the team that is going to have the quarterback hit the sophomore slump, and now you have invested in all these older guys, and you are not really building a team anymore. You're just adding pieces. At some point, you get diminishing returns with all those old guys. So I do want to get into that part in just a little bit. Maybe we'll hit that next segment. But I want to start by talking about Jaden saying he's going to hit a sophomore slump. So the thing to me is, could you see him take a step back maybe? I'm not, yeah. You know, you don't want to deny that because he was so remarkable. The thing about it, Mitch, is he was so remarkable. He was playing at a top five level, arguably a top three level at the sport. If he falls to top five, that's technically a step back. Like if this team wins 10 games next year and gets into the playoffs as a wild card, it's technically a step back, right?
That's if you only look at the result.
Exactly. So it doesn't necessarily mean that they're worse. I think for Jaden, a big part of this, when you look at CJ Stroud, because it's mentioned, you know, he took the sophomore slump, so to speak, right? When you look at CJ, he took a step back, but also look around him what happened. The offensive line wasn't as good.
They were banged up.
And Bobby Slowick's no longer the offensive coordinator there because he was so bad.
He's no longer the offensive coordinator, but they also had, they traded for Stephon Diggs. He got hurt.
Yeah.
Tank Dell, that was he got hurt throughout the year.
Yeah.
And their top guy was banged up for a little bit.
Nico Collins.
So not only did you have your top three receivers be hurt, your offensive line wasn't good, and your offensive coordinator wasn't good. You're supposed to take a sophomore. You're supposed to take a step back.
Well, and by the way, a step back for them was what? Getting in the playoffs and winning a playoff game, right? Yeah. Like, so I think if you're Washington, you'd take that in a heartbeat. So the thing that I think about this, too, is...
You know what? How about that same guy? Ask him, since he mentioned about them getting older players, most people think older players mean experienced players.
Yeah.
And normally when you're experienced, you don't have to be as athletic.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to know what that same, he don't want to be known.
Yeah, of course.
I want to know what he said last year about him. I promise it wasn't positive. So now he got to double down because he was already proven wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. I think when you look at Jaden, though, one thing that I think saves him, and it's something that I'll admit I underrated when he was being drafted, is his legs are just such a weapon. So that, you know, C.J. Stroud, if his offensive line isn't good, if he doesn't have everything working in process in the system, then he's going to struggle.
Yeah.
Jaden, Cliff Kingsbury feels great because he can call the wrong play, and Jaden still turns it into a 10-yard gain because he just turns, you know, something out of nothing.
Listen, man, Pat Mahomes has taken steps back. Joe Montana took steps back. But overall, they made the right decision in the right plays.
Yeah.
What I like so much about Jaden is this. Jaden is not the player who thinks, I have to make up everything in one play. He proved that in a rookie year where I'll wait. You know, I'll wait till later. I'll just get this amount right now. He proved that he could learn, and he also proved that he's not one who thinks I can get all back in one big swoop. So he sticks to the script, which most quarterbacks do not do.
Yeah.
I think that helps him right there. And, yes, they've gotten some older players and all, but I think they got some more experienced players, which overall I think the team is better offensively than it was last year right now.
Yeah, no doubt. Jeff, you want to weigh in on this?
I personally do not think he'll take a step back. Like B said, you know, things change season to season. Schedules get harder. But the thing is, that's only if you're looking at the result.
Yeah.
One thing we learned about Jaden, and I think – because he make plays with his feet that it tend to overshadow that he can actually stay in the pocket and make a pass. He'll take that hit. People don't understand that he's not just what they like to label him, a running quarterback. No, this man is an all around quarterback from what I've seen.
Exactly. Quarterback that can run.
Yes. It's like, okay, I can do this in the pocket. I see this in the pocket. Oh, I gotta go. Now I'm gonna go make the play. It's hard to stop that when you got a guy that can carve you up in the air and outrun everybody on your defense. So I don't think it will be a step taken back. I don't care record-wise. As long as he just, you know, shows that, okay, I made the right play here. Okay, I messed up on this play, but I came and I bounced back. Yeah. So,
but like, if you look at what he did last year, and you were talking about it earlier, we had one dominant guy on offense. Other than him, it was Terry.
Mm-hmm.
You have extra people now.
Yeah.
You brought it. So now, what do you do? What poison are you going to take? Do you try and take Terry out of it and let Debo go one-on-one? Do you try to take both of those dudes out and then and when you're running man-to-man, Jaden is even more dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Does Luke take a step forward? Luke can fly. and become something remarkable for you as well. I just think that normally guys take a step back when teams stay stagnant.
They did not.
When they don't try to improve things, try to make it to where you have to look, you have to worry about more than just one guy or the other. I think Washington has done that. No, they didn't go out there and grab a lot of big names, but big names don't always just win games for you. You need to have effective players.
Yeah, and I think for me, when you look at Jaden, to your point, Pat Mahomes has taken steps back year to year in his career, and mm-hmm. he's still the top guy in the league.
Yeah,
people do it all the time, and I think it'd be one thing if Jaden didn't show me everything in his rookie season. He checked every box for me, right? Like, he can obviously run. You look at what he was week one to what he was playing like in the NFC Championship game. Totally different quarterback. He grew and improved. But just look at everything that you need to see from a quarterback. To Jeff's point, decision-making from the pocket, he can do it. Check. Can run. Can create. Check. Isn't bringing his eyes down. Isn't rattled by the blitz. Check.
And stop taking hits.
And check. And clutch, right? Like, that's the other thing, too, is like, just
that
because...
the gene he had right there, that clutch gene he presented, that doesn't leave you.
Exactly.
That's not something that you could teach. Either you have that or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
I have watched this dude, and see, everybody here, and I'm not trying to make myself more different than people, but I don't look at football like the typical fan. I watch, like, the guy, if he's in the NFL, he could play football to me. Point blank. I watch what else he does. He's not only calm on the field, he's calm in everything he does.
Everything.
The dude is just, and that is not something I don't think he was taught. I think that's just his personality. When you watch him and you hear, dude doesn't act like a young dude. He doesn't really care about what all the young, he has to have fun. He does what he, but some people think, oh, I got drafted. Nah, I made it. He got drafted. He said, I got to go to work. That right there takes you a long way.
Yeah, I mean, he's just so different than some of these other guys that have come into the league that haven't had it work out. The thing, you know, looking back at when we were talking during training camp and just thinking about some of the things that we were talking about with Jaden then, like, immediately, the first couple days where he'd come off the field and, you know, whoever's stepping in, Mariota or Driscoll or someone's getting a rep, and who's he over there talking to? He's talking to Bobby Wagner.
Yeah.
Picking his brain, like, hey, what are you looking at here? What are you seeing? Or even just having fun building camaraderie with the guys. He's such a good leader at such a young age. And it's, again, it's something that I kind of discounted, where his learning experience going from Arizona State to LSU, I think, kind of awakened him to some things.
Mm-hmm.
And then he carried that over with the work ethic that he learned at LSU and continued that into his time here in D.C.
People talk about that sophomore slump. And it's not just in the quarterback position. It happens at other positions, too. And normally what happens is a guy comes out, he has a great year. The defensive coordinators in this league, they're exceptional, okay? They're going to look at what you did well all offseason, and they're going to come in and try to come up with a game plan to affect everything you do great and try to make you do things that you don't normally do great. You know who else got to be able to do better? The offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back, I've always said you got to self-scout. If you go back and look at all the things you did spectacular last year, you better damn well know that they finna come and try to stop that. And what you need to do is be able to have something ready for them. Or just give them a different look and run the exact same damn thing that you did. Because, see, this is what happens. Defenses make their calls based off of your look that you present to them. By the time that ball snapped, you could be in something else. What Joe Gibbs always did was he'll have different personnel groupings, and he ran the same stuff. But he may start one time with guys in like two wides, two slots, backfield, and then one guy go into motion and end up somewhere else. The next time he got a different personnel grouping, they line up in that. They come back to what they started in before. So now the defense is trying to, they're looking at your look and going, oh, and then you run something that just, I didn't run this ordinarily before. You know, it's up to the coordinators now and the coaches to figure out something different for the offense, not just the quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, and I've heard people, like, I hear people all the time, well, that quarterback, no. He's not calling the plays.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Only person I know that called the plays all the time is Peyton Manning. But if I am getting plays from the coach, as a quarterback, I got to look at their defense and understand what they're trying to do to me in this offense to try to come up with something differently. But you better be on page with your coach.
Yeah, and I think that's the beauty of it. We saw that relationship grow as the season went on. And then the other part about it, too, is Cliff Kingsbury has so much experience, not just as a play caller, as an offensive coordinator, but as a head coach, that where Bobby Slowick kind of took a step back in year two with C.J. Stroud and now is out of a job or has moved on to somewhere else, I don't necessarily worry about that with Cliff. It's never been starting seasons, and it's more so the Cliff in the second half of year. So be interesting to see. I hope that he takes that step with Jaden, like you're talking about, where the offensive play caller doesn't necessarily take a step back.
Seems like we haven't heard anything on the stadium for a while. Like, kind of thought that when we got the, 2 a.m., 11th hour save, that we might, with the new Congress taking shape in mid-January, that we would have had something resolved by now. Eric Flack covers the stadium story and has better than anybody. He joins us right now, of course, Eric, from WUSA TV9. So, am I right? Doesn't it seem like this story is dragged on? And if so, why and what's going on?
Well, it was so much excitement, and then it just all went dead because once D.C. got the land, everybody kind of forgot about the fact that then, the team in the city had to hammer out a deal. I think a lot is going on behind the scenes that is not in the public eye right now. I think there are a lot, what I'm hearing is that there are a lot of discussions ongoing and pretty intensive between the team and the mayor's office to, in fact, figure out what the parameters of a potential stadium deal to bring the Commanders back to D.C. are going to be. But when Congress sort of threatened and then in actuality did in take away a bunch of money, about $1 billion from D.C. government, that threw everything into a tailspin because all of a sudden D.C. government was facing a catastrophic budget deficit, budget crisis. Now, we now know that there's a bill to kind of replace that funding and kind of set the city back to where it was financially, which I've been told is going to allow the city to move forward with the stadium agreement as they planned. But really, until Congress officially passes that legislation to kind of put DC's budget back where it was and always, before, really nothing can be announced officially. So I think the negotiations continue behind the scenes. I think I've been told that they're very close to reaching and some sort of an agreement, but really they can't move forward with anything. Nothing can be official until, the Congress, fixes D.C.'s budget, and only then can they kind of move forward with the stadium stuff.
I want to make sure I'm clear on something. The budget conversation, the budget things that you just talked about, that's different than control of the land. The city has control of the land, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. The city has control of the land to build a stadium, a Ferris wheel.
To do whatever they want.
Zoo, whatever they want.
Yeah,
that is, and the language that has been signed by Congress to give the city back the land said it can do a multitude of things, including building a stadium there. But
weren't
DC has
you and everybody else, and I even thought it was kind of intuitive. Didn't we all think that once they got control of the land, that the parameters of a deal between the city and the team had been discussed,
yes,
had gotten close to the finish line? It didn't mean that the team was okay with it. It didn't mean that it would pass on the council, but that the framework of a deal was in place as long as they got the land.
Yes. And I don't know.
I mean, the mayor told me on the record in front of a camera that the negotiations were going on before they got the land back. So
right.
We know for sure that talks were happening. I mean, the mayor was in the box with Josh Harris and the commanders and all the people, like, multiple times. So we know the discussions were ongoing. How substantial those discussions were, I think, remains unclear. And I think what I understand is that there was much more to do post land return to DC. And in fact, there was not a, you know, blanket contract that just needed "we have the land back" to be filled in on line number 6 to move forward. That they did in fact have to kind of hammer out details and who would pay for what and how it would be done. But I've been told that a lot of progress has been made on that. And, you know, but until the budget is kind of official, I think it would be irresponsible, the belief is, to kind of announce anything, even if they have parameters in place. And again, to be clear, I don't think a deal has been officially struck behind the scenes that when Congress, if when as expected Congress fixes this budget thing, that, you know, but that the deal is already signed. I think it could be very quickly that after that, you know, budget announcement is made, that we hear about, you know, a commander's stadium deal with the district.
So just thinking about it, Eric, chronologically, and just, you know, tell me where I've missed on this. So we've got this new wrinkle, which is restoring the DC budget. So let's just assume that happens. Then it's about coming to an agreement with the city over the parameters of a deal. You know, how much the city's going to pay for, what the stadium's going to look like, what the surrounding area, who does what, infrastructure-wise, et cetera. By the way, for the team's sake, to compare side by side with whatever the Maryland offer is. Then it goes to the city council, where they have to get 7 votes out of the 13 council members before it ends up being finalized, and then we, you know, have a ribbon cutting ceremony to, you know, start construction on something at some point. Is that chronologically the next few steps before we get to, okay, it's going to go there at RFK?
That's all correct. And I think while it is understood that the mayor's office is dealing and negotiating with the commanders independently of any other voices on DC council, because the mayor has always sort of, you know, negotiated in that way and is very independent and cuts her own deals, that it is also understood that the people who the commanders have working on this project understand how the sausage is made. And that it wasn't too long ago that an owner of a basketball team and a hockey team in this city cut a deal with the governor in Virginia and thought he had a new arena in Northern Virginia, but forgot he had to have the approval of the entire Virginia legislature. You know, the commanders aren't gonna make that mistake. Are certainly gonna do everything they can to not make that mistake. So they have, and I've reported in the past, they are having some, like, parallel discussions with council members. Here's what we're talking about, to make sure that whatever they ultimately negotiate with the mayor and agree to with the mayor is ultimately going to get through DC council. It doesn't make any sense to cut some deal with the mayor. She can agree.
It's wasting time.
That's never going to get through DC council. So they kind of have to walk and chew gum at the same time. And I think they're doing that.
Well, do you feel like the team that Josh Harris and his group have some comfort that whatever they discussed would get passed by the council?
I think that they are laser focused on getting the stadium built in D.C. I think that's priority one, job one. I think they have really smart people who understand the politics, and I think they understand that it's a two-part process. So it's a long way of saying, yeah, I think that they, to the extent that they are getting close to some sort of an agreement with the mayor, if this D.C. budget thing with Congress gets worked out, I don't think they would ever try and sign some deal and have some press conference for a deal that was ultimately not going to get through D.C. council. So I think they probably do have some comfortability that they're close enough, I mean, the ballpark, to use a pun, with both sides.
At Eric Flack TV, Eric's joining us right now from WUSA Channel 9. You know, one of the things that I think, just from afar, and maybe I'm off on this, the football team's showing some patience here, because they do have a timeline, and this restoring the D.C. budget and getting, you know, a government to move quickly, they want to get a shovel into the ground sooner rather than later. So just update me on whether or not there's, you know, some frustration on the process here maybe having been slowed down a bit by this D.C. budget issue.
Well, I think so. But if you think holistically about how this has gone, I mean, how many twists and turns and roadblocks have there been that they've overcome? I mean, reaching an agreement to get to get the land back, only to have it blown up in the middle of the final days of Congress, only to have this 11th hour, 2 a.m., you know, Hail Mary passage of the land deal. So, yeah, I mean, I think they would always like it to move quicker. I mean, we all want to have the ribbon cutting ceremony. Everybody wants the team back in D.C., which, as we know, is the majority of people. That's not opinion. That's fact. We all want it to the ribbon cutting ceremony. But I do think they know that they have this process, which dates back to Dan Snyder, of getting the team back to RFK, to the RFK site, has never been closer. And all these roadblocks that come up have to be almost expected, par for the course, you know, so to speak, with the way this process has gone. But, you know, it is very likely understood and expected that the Congress is going to put back this budget thing, restore D.C.'s budget. They are, you know, continuing to make progress with D.C. And I think that, you know, as many roadblocks and frustrations have been, including the fact that the mayor, like, you know, by D.C. code is supposed to have the budget, you know, presented a week ago, but obviously can't do that because of everything that's going on in Congress, and the chief financial officer can't even approve it because of everything being in flux. But even with things getting delayed, if in fact late April, early May, you know, you get a deal, you get a budget deal, DC's budget is back where it is, then you get a stadium deal, you're still on track to potentially get DC Council to approve it by this summer, which has always been the timeline. DC Council always approves these things in the summer. They approve Nats Park in the summer. This always happens kind of in that window. So the time window, despite all the obstacles, is actually still about where it needs to be.
So what does that mean? If everything's kind of comes together and city council passes it this summer, when does the stadium open?
I think 2030. I think that's what they're saying, 2030. Maybe fall 2030, 2030, 2031 season. So it would be like September. It would be that like fall opening weekend of 2030 into 2031. Which I think, you know, we're in 2025 right now, so that gives them a good amount of time. I mean, that's plenty of time to build a stadium, to have it done by 2030, which I think
was always the expected timeline. The mayor came out like after they got the – she was kind of riding on the high of getting the land back and said, I think we could do it in 2 or 3 years. I don't know anybody who really believes that's possible with all the things that have to be done. I mean, there's still a stadium there, for God's sakes. You know, I mean, yeah. It's not like empty land. So,
when will that be raised?
I think it was supposed to be last year, but yeah, they had right. So many environmental issues. I think they're supposed to be taking it down piece by piece, section by section later on this year. I've been told inside is all, it's a shell now. There's nothing left inside. Literally, it's just the shell of the stadium that's remaining. I think they want to have some, you know, ceremonies and stuff to mark. Right. It's and it would make sense that might be in conjunction, wouldn't it, with a stadium announcement. I mean, it would make sense that, you know, they announce, you know, the announcement of the new stadium comes as they announce tearing down, plans to tear down and remember the old stadium. Yeah.
Last one, Eric, and appreciate the time and the update. So do we know definitively what the stadium will look like? Capacity, domed, retractable roof? What do we know about that?
Here's what I know. 65,000 is the cutoff for a Super Bowl. So it's going to be around 65,000, between 65,000 and 70,000. They don't want – these stadiums aren't that huge anymore. Like Jerry Jones and Allegiant, yeah, right. You know, aside. So over 65, but not too huge. It will have a dome. Retractable is not the trend anymore. It's just too expensive and not necessary. Translucent domes are what's being built now, to where it's not a dome that gets retracted, but you still have that feeling that you're outside because
natural.
Because you see the sky, and then based on reporting I've done, no tailgating or extremely, yeah, because there's no parking. There's not going to be the parking lot space. That's the right. One thing that FedEx has going for it is just a sea of parking lots for tailgating. They won't have that.
We went through that conversation and debate, you know, a month or so ago. Yep. And that is the trend too, especially with downtown stadiums. Thank you so much, Eric. Appreciate the update. Yeah. Hope you're well.
Anytime, man.
Jennifer Lee Chan is a friend of mine. She does a great job covering the 49ers for NBC Sports Bay Area. I reached out to her when the Commanders hired Welker because it was pretty obvious at least what the ties were between Welker and Debo and Debo's best seasons in San Fran.
Mm-hmm.
And so we ended up doing something for TV, and I just thought she gave us some really good information on the depth of the relationship. This is Jennifer Lee Chan talking about Wes Welker coming to Washington, working with Debo Samuel.
There is no doubt that the reason Debo Samuel had his best NFL season ever in 2021 was because Wes Welker was his wide receivers coach. Now, Wes was there when the 49ers coached the Senior Bowl, and Debo Samuel was a prospect out of University of South Carolina. They really liked what he was able to do on the field during practices, and they ended up drafting him. Welker was there the entire time, and it led up to that 2021 season where Debo Samuel had 1,400 yards receiving, 6 receiving touchdowns, and an additional 8 touchdowns on the ground. Now, Debo Samuel isn't known for his finesse route running, but he is known for knocking people over. Wes Welker absolutely got the best out of him. Debo Samuel is a guy who isn't always super consistent. But Wes Welker is a professional. He was in the league for 12 years, and part of that is getting the best out of the receivers that he's coaching. So Debo Samuel was a guy who has come into training camp, maybe a little bit heavier. Miss Muschamp, his coach from South Carolina, actually warned Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch about that. And I think the reason that Debo Samuel had those great first 3 seasons, and especially 2021, was because Wes Welker was on him about being a professional and how to show up to work every day. And I think it is the best case scenario for not only the Washington Commanders, but for Debo Samuel and Wes Welker.
So you reunite Wes and Debo here. If you go back, 21, Debo was just outrageous, mm-hmm. outrageous. They also hadn't acquired Christian McCaffrey yet, which it's always good to add more great players, but it changed.
It takes away from what you were able to do.
Right. It just changes your, you know what I mean? It changes your offense.
Yeah.
What also happened after the 2021 season, Mike McDaniel, who was the offensive coordinator, left to take the Miami head coaching job, and Wes Welker went with him to Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Debo in 22, the numbers were down, fighting some injuries. 23, he hasn't gotten back to the form from 21, which was his all-pro fantastic season. Last year was better. B, you have talked about, I mean, hell, we were all kind of just talking about it with Wes,
mm-hmm.
how coaching in professional sports is equal parts scheme, but like psychology.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've, I actually, when I heard, when Jennifer was saying that to me, I thought of you with David Culley, yeah. like a guy that means a lot to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be, like, you don't have to be a pro athlete to have somebody that was a coach or a mentor that just meant a lot to you and helped you advance your career.
Yeah.
Do you think Welker could be that guy for Debo here after a couple years off?
Yeah. I think every player has found a coach that they listen to because of what I just said. That coach makes the player understand, I care about you. I respect you. See what I'm saying? Then when that player knows that, that coach has free range then. Free range to say what he wants to say, how he wants to say it, because the player knows everything comes from a place of love or a place of you're trying to get the best out of me. Not that you're trying to talk down on me. There are a lot of coaches who never played this game who come at players because I'm the coach, I can talk to you any kind of way. First of all, you got to get respect. The respect of the player before you can really coach him hard like that. Now, Wes Welker comes in, it's not hard for him to get respect. He played, he won Super Bowls, you saw what he's done. Now when he comes into it, he knows the game because he was a player. He comes in and tell you how great you could be, how good you've been doing, but I need you to work on this stuff. Now you're like, oh, coach, you saw that? So if I start doing this, I could get better. Now I'm listening to everything he says. So I would say the 49ers benefited from Welker, but Welker was able to get Debo to do the things necessary to get to the league the way he was. And probably to be that guy who come back here again and get him there again. You know, but you got to have that first. You know, a lot of coaches, a lot of coaches who didn't play the game of football still have that little edge about themselves, and they want to talk trash to the players. And it comes into play, and players don't ever respect them. And that's why a lot of times you see some coaches just can't get a player to his best.
You got to meet people where they are in whatever capacity that is. I think you nailed that, B. I think so Jennifer talked about how Welker – Coach Debo at that Senior Bowl before they drafted him, mm-hmm. right? He was a position coach. You know who? So the Niners were coming off the worst record, so they went and coached the Senior Bowl. You know who else was there that week in Mobile? Adam Peters. Mm. He talked about it.
Oh yeah.
So
that's why he was willing to go get him.
So he knows Debo, and he knows what Welker and Debo were together.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's pretty. We said this last year.
It's trust. The player trusts the coach, and the coach trusts the player. And they both get the best out of everything.
Since Josh Harris got his hands fully wrapped around the organization, there's not many accidents out there in Ashburn.
Hell no.
Like, everything is purposeful and driven. And I think this is another step in that vein. And I think it is I'm fascinated to see the results. Now, one quick trivia question. You said it. Nobody look it up. One, two, three, eyes on me. How many Super Bowls has Wes Welker won?
Was it two?
B. Mitch is in the door at two.
Zero.
I'm going to go zero, too.
I was going to go one.
He was with the Patriots for both Super Bowl losses to the Giants.
Wow.
And he was with Peyton Manning when they got throttled by the Seahawks.
So
three Super Bowl appearances.
So if they get to the Super Bowl, cut him. Get rid of him.
Yo, and in San Fran as a coach when they lost to the Chiefs the first time.
He know how to get you there. So yeah. He has a little Buffalo in him.
That's crazy, right?
That's crazy.
All right.
I thought he had one, too.
I did, too.
Coming he was up in, too.
At 1 o'clock, huge game for the Washington Capitals tonight. Joe Beninati, play-by-play voice of the Caps, joins us at 1.